for antiwar.com at Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio.
The Mason's wall, but I'm the head cornerstone who could ruin it all. The population really needs to get hip to the hustle. 10% live in abundance while the rest struggle. I'm on the west coast of Babylon living in fear, and God's coming for retribution. I don't want to be here when the comet hits or the bomb drops, and all the wicked administrations to the corrupt cops, the bad teachers and false prophets, y'all gonna pay the pain for yesterday's atrocities we're feeling today. And it's a sad state for those who choose to ignore it, competing with the Joneses and nothing to show for it. Cold world people caused by the love of money, and in this cap idolism ain't a damn thing funny. 24/7 live mind control, the man got us plugged in, slowly stealing our souls. Grab hold of your faculties with the time you're allotted. The new world's now in order and the course has been plotted. Stand in line for the chip and the form you bought it. Educational thought control. We need love, peace, and happiness all over the globe. We don't need no educational thought control. We need love, peace, and happiness all over the globe. My public education never meant shit to me. That's why I'm out here grinding, trying to peddle this weed. I know a lot of smart brothers with college degrees, but when it comes to making paper, they're broker than me. Shit, I never knew the meaning of a GED. It stands for grinding every day, or your ass won't eat. You ever wonder why they call LA the melting pot? They added pistols, cracking A's just to see what they got. It's called genocide, with a very specific purpose. It's killing black and Latinos, and all of us should be nervous. You need proof? Look what they did to the natives. Smallpox, booze, and treachery, the devil's created. Place chiefs wanna slap them in a reservation. I'm talking project tenements from the plantation. And in the penitentiary, they're doing castrations, putting poison in the food so you can't taste them. But the trickery ain't fooling me, I'm schooling the youth. And we don't need no education, what we need is the truth. Hey, teacher, why don't you leave the kids alone? We don't need no education, no thought control. We need love, peace, and happiness all over the globe. We need love, peace, and happiness all over the globe.
Charles, welcome to Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. Thanks for tuning in. I didn't want to arrest him, said Special Agent Russell Fincher. I needed his cooperation. He said the agency had hoped Padilla could provide information about an Al-Qaeda plot to detonate a radioactive device, or so-called dirty bomb, on U.S. soil, and needed an insider. So, that's where your government got the lie that Jose Padilla was going to set off a dirty bomb. He was arrested on a material witness warrant. Special Agent Fincher of the Federal Bureau of Investigation said, "I'm interested in dirty bomb plots. I wonder if I can flip this guy and make him a snitch and see what he can find out for me. Padilla said, no, man, I don't want to do that. So they turned him over to the Navy to be tortured for 3 years. That's where they got the lie that he was part of a dirty bomb plot. They tried to hire him to become part of a dirty bomb plot. And actually, I've had people try to misconstrue this before. No, I'm not saying the government was setting up a plot to blow up a dirty bomb. Stupid. Listen. The FBI agent wanted to find out about dirty bomb plots, tried to flip Padilla to get him to go find a dirty bomb plot to join so that he could snitch back to the state about it, okay? The man was innocent. He didn't do anything. He knew a guy, who sent some money to Chechnya. He was a former Taco Bell employee, apparently some brand of lowlife or another, who went to find Islam and went to go study in the Middle East. Lord knows it's possible that he knew a guy who knew a guy who was a money bag man for bin Laden or something. But as Will Grigg points out on LouRockwell.com today, they tortured people into saying that they knew bin Laden. Or that they knew Padilla, and that Padilla knew them and knew bin Laden, that he was part of the Al-Qaeda network. They tortured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed into saying that, and two other men as well, including an Ethiopian man who they cut his genitals with a razor blade, and said, really, you're gonna tell us that you know Padilla and he's Al-Qaeda, aren't you? And the guy said, yeah, give me a pen. And they held him in a naval brig, and all the information that's come out now, and thank goodness for the Christian Science Monitor, they've done such a good job on this story. They basically, for intents and purposes, here's what they did to Padilla. They took him into a cell block by himself, an entire cell block, empty. They put him in a cell, a small one, by himself. They blacked out the door so he can't even look out into the empty hallway. Blacked out the window. And they basically left him chained on the floor by himself for years. He had no contact with the outside world at all. And in fact, even when the interrogators would come, no one would even touch him. He just led around by his chains if he was ever taken anywhere. And the only contact he had was with his interrogator. And this all came out in the court documents, that they drove him crazy. They inflicted pain on him, such as, you know, hog-tying him and leaving him like that. And then they would basically brainwash him and tell him he's the one inflicting the pain on himself. What's the matter, Jose? Stop hitting yourself, dude. Stop hitting yourself. They're torturing him, and then they tell him that he's the one causing all the pain. It'd be easy for him to make it go away if he would just stop hurting himself. And they drove the man mad. He wasn't even really fit to stand trial, but I'm skipping ahead. So this innocent man, who is not a danger to anyone, former Taco Bell employee, American citizen, arrested unarmed on American soil by domestic police forces, detained on a material witness warrant, not even arrested, charged with a crime, was turned over to the Navy because they had nothing on him in the first place. They tortured him for years. As James Bovard said yesterday, the Ike Turner school of torture. Hey, not a bruise on him. Look, Judge, no bruises. He's fine. And then the case finally was coming up to the Supreme Court. It had come to the Supreme Court once, and the Supreme Court had ducked the issue, saying that the lawsuit was filed in the wrong jurisdiction. Because he had been moved to South Carolina by the military who had kidnapped him. But on the second chance, they didn't duck it. They didn't have a technicality procedural thing with which to duck the issue. And they were about to rule that, hey, you can't just abduct American citizens and turn them over to the military to be tortured. can't do that. And the administration knew that that's what they were going to rule. And so they said, oh, okay, no problem, and indicted him in federal court, just like they absolutely couldn't do because he was so dangerous. He was such a terrorist, dirty bomber. Never mind the fact that Paul Wolfowitz admitted soon after he was arrested that we don't think that this guy actually did anything beyond some fairly loose talk, is the quote from the Deputy Secretary of Defense who was in charge of kidnapping and torturing this guy. And so what they do, they indicted these two guys that they who lived in the United States, who the FBI had been monitoring for 13 years. That's how dangerous they were. They hurried up and indicted them, and then they tacked on Padilla to the end of their indictment. And then they held this ridiculous kangaroo, just farcical trial, where the evidence against him literally consists of an Al-Qaeda application form, which the government's own witness said that after he filled out something just like it, he was still asked yes or no, do you want to join? So even if he had filled this out, doesn't mean he joined anything. That's the government's own witness. But second of all, you know what fingerprints they had on it of Jose Padilla's? It was the fingers on the back, the thumbs on the top of the on the front, as though someone had just handed it to him and he held it in both hands and then gave it back. No evidence whatsoever that it was filled out by Jose Padilla. No evidence whatsoever. And no evidence that if he had filled it out that it meant a damn thing anyway. And that was it. That's what they had on Jose Padilla. That he knew these two other guys. He talked to them on the phone. Not that he ever incriminated himself while he was on the phone with them. But he knew them. And so now the jury in Florida, unforgivably, has convicted this man. This man who was tortured by the United States military. I mean, I'm here to tell you, I don't care if he was plotting to blow up apartment buildings and radioactive dirty bombs. If he's abducted and tortured by the military, I'm voting to acquit. I don't care. He's already done his time as far as I'm concerned. But at the end of the day, the guy's innocent. There was no dirty bomb. Sure as hell wasn't in the indictment. He was innocent. That's why they turned him over to the Navy to be tortured in the first place. And now this Florida jury has gone ahead and convicted him, which may actually be a silver lining because as discussed yesterday with Mr. Bovard from the Future Freedom Foundation, it could very well be the case that if he'd been acquitted, that the military would have just come and abducted him and taken him back to the brig to be tortured, you know, for the rest of his short-ass life. So maybe he's lucky, although maybe the president's just going to say, see, he was convicted. I told you he was an enemy combatant, and abduct him and take him back into military custody anyway. Who's going to stop him? The Democrats? This is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 Austin, Texas.
I am known for sticking to principle and not flip-flopping.
Yeah, we need a good man for presidency.
I would guarantee that I would never abuse habeas corpus.
We want him to get the America we have about help with.
The freedom message brings us together. It doesn't divide us.
I'll say. Rand Paul is here. Waking up people everywhere. Rand Paul is here. Making people be aware. Rand Paul is here.
The freedom message.
Waking up people everywhere. Rand Paul is here.
Defending liberty.
Vote for the man, Lord, next year. There's a doctor in the house.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Houston, we have a problem. We need Rand Paul to solve them. Houston, we have a problem. We need Rand Paul to solve them.
The principle, the moral principle, is that of defending liberty and minimizing the scope of government. If you think the government has to take care of us from cradle to grave, and if you think our government should police the world and spend hundreds of billions of dollars on a foreign policy that we cannot manage, you can't get rid of the IRS. But if you want to lower taxes, and if you don't want the government to quit printing the money to come up with shortfall and cause all the inflation, you have to change policy.
It is a doctor in the house. It is a doctor in the house. It is a doctor in the house. The code blue, Somebody ball out in ICU. Them have a patient where them whipped into. That's the constitution where them whipped into. Need a resuscitation to fix it.
In Washington, we either prohibit it or subsidize it. And the market should deal with it and the state should deal with it. We print money for it. The value of the money goes down and poor people pay higher prices. That is a tax. Wall Street's doing quite well, but the inflation tax is eating away at the middle class of this country. We need to get rid of the inflation tax with sound money.
He's the only man could help the country. And when him come and help all of we people, man, you know you have to vote for him.
I am absolutely opposed to a national ID card. This is a total contradiction of what a free society is all about. The purpose of government is to protect the secrecy and the privacy of all individuals, not the secrecy of government. We don't need a national ID card. The freedom message brings us together. It doesn't divide us.
Lord, no. Hey, come here, no. Rand Paul is here, helping people everywhere. Rand Paul is here.
It's true, you know. Ron Paul is here. First guest today on Anti-War Radio, Dr. Ron Paul. He's a former Air Force flight surgeon and an obstetrician by trade. He's a 10-term congressman from District 14 on the Gulf Coast. He's the author of the books Gold, Peace, and Prosperity, The Case for Gold, Mises and Austrian Economics, Freedom Under Siege, A Republic If You Can Keep It, and A Foreign Policy of Freedom. He's currently running for President of the United States of America. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Paul.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be with you.
Oh, it's so good to have you back on the show. And I have to tell you, we're all very excited about all the hype, I guess. I don't know what else to call it. All the thousands and thousands, maybe millions of people who are being turned on to the message of liberty due to your recent efforts. I guess my real question in terms of your presidential campaign so far is, are you having fun?
Well, it is. It's really rewarding to know that there's so many people interested. I'd like to take all the credit for it, but to tell you the truth, I think there have been a lot of seeds planted over the last decade or two to get so many people interested. But now that we're getting some attention for this message, it's very, very pleasing to find so many new people willing to come in. And sometimes it's young people bringing in their parents and vice versa. So it is really exciting. It is a tedious job, but we've been at this before, and it's always been at a much lower key since I've been doing this for 30 years. We've never quite seen the interest expressed by so many people, and I think the internet has a lot to do with that. And of course, talk show is radio is helping out a whole lot, and maybe one day we will get the mainstream media talking about freedom and the Constitution.
Well, as far as spokesmen for individualism and liberty and limited government in this country, you are the best of them, and you shouldn't sell yourself short. It's has a lot to do with the messenger, and people can tell that you mean what you say. You're consistent. You follow the principles that you preach, and people can tell that you really mean it. That's why they take you so seriously.
Well, thank you.
Now, let's talk foreign policy. The last time we spoke, you mentioned repeatedly that the costs of the wars were going to come back and haunt us. Is that what's beginning to happen now?
Yeah, I think so. Those of us who remember very clearly the 60s and the 70s, of course, I was in the Air Force during the 60s, and back then, Johnson reassured the public, and he said that it doesn't matter. You can have guns and you can have butter. Otherwise, in other words, you can run a huge military operation in a welfare state and expand it, and don't worry about it. Well, he was completely wrong, because the 70s were very, very hectic, and we had a lot of inflation, and we had a very weak economy, and the dollar was on the ropes and was rescued at the end of that decade, barely. But all the metals and commodity prices were soaring. And then things have settled down. But once again, in the last 10 years, we've been back at it again. I mean, conservatives have been elected to cut back on the size of the government, and government keeps expanding. The entitlement system is exploding. And now we have this ongoing war in several places, like both Afghanistan and in Iraq, with the threat that it may spread to Iran. And the markets now are starting to react, because we have paid for it temporarily by borrowing money and by inflating. That is, literally, we have permitted our Federal Reserve to create money to buy Treasury bills in order to pay these bills. But that doesn't work. That's just a delay in payment the eventual payment comes when the dollar gets weak and prices go up and markets get shaky, and we're still starting to see the beginning of a real, real serious shakeout with the nervousness that we're seeing on Wall Street today.
Do you remember in 2002 the Deputy Secretary of Defense testifying that the oil sales from Iraqi oil will pay for the war?
Yeah, revenue neutral war. Yeah, and remember Larry Lindsey predicted how much money it might be, and his was a modest prediction, and of course he got fired, you know, from the administration, and the general, I think it was Shinseki, that said that we'd need a lot more troops if we really want to win, and of course he got set aside. So anybody that tells the truth about the real cost of this war, whether it has to do with money or the number of troops or the quagmire that has occurred, you know, you're not received very well. People don't want to hear the truth if you're trying to do something that the American people actually don't understand or really don't want. So I think that it turned out like many had predicted. It wasn't like nobody was concerned and made predictions that this would be very costly, and that's what's coming about. I mean, the oil's not paying for it, and we're still there, and the billions of dollars that we appropriate are still being spent. There's no end in sight, and you know, they talk about 3,600 men and women killed over there, but another 1,000 of contractors have been killed, and the wounded are, you know, it's unknown how many wounded and sick we have. They claim maybe 30,000, but there could be twice that many when you look at all the illnesses and the post-traumatic stress syndrome and brain injuries that aren't yet recorded. So it is unbelievable what this cost is going to be, and it's endless. And yet there seems to be no serious attempt by anybody in Washington to change policy.
I'm so glad you mentioned the wounded soldiers. We've seen so many stories about guys with post-traumatic stress disorder told to drink a beer and chin up and be a man and quit complaining. We've seen articles about soldiers who are literally physically wounded who are being told that they have some sort of personality disorder that disqualifies them from medical care. And I know you're an opponent of socialized medicine, but these are American soldiers who've done their duty and are wounded. And it seems like the Bush administration is just turning their back on them.
Yeah, and this is a high responsibility of ours to take care of those men. So I don't put that in the category of socialized medicine. That's a responsibility because our policies have caused these problems to occur. And if something doesn't happen, these numbers are going to continue to grow. And we just saw this week the statistics on suicides on military higher than ever. And this is something which I don't think is surprising. I'm surprised it's not worse, and it's not just being wimpish. It's the fact that governments ask their young people to do things that aren't normal. If you take a normal individual that's a teenager or just past teenage and ask him to turn him into an individual that shoot and kill strangers that he never knew of and have never done any damage or threatened us, it contradicts everything that I think is natural to our psyche. And yet we tell them that we do this in the name of patriotism and saving our Constitution and protecting our liberties. And it's a schizophrenic type of operation. So this produces a lot of stress. In one sense, the government is saying you're a noble hero to go over and kill people. At the same sense, they don't have it in them to do this. And because of that conflict, it leads to depression, which is not abnormal. It to me seems to be a normal reaction for decent people to become depressed over this conflict of interest.
Right, and then the government doesn't want to really acknowledge how bad the problem is with the post-traumatic stress and so forth, because then they have to admit that this is the results of their policy.
No, they want to hide it, just like they hid the problems of the Agent Orange problems that came out of Vietnam, and the Persian Gulf War syndrome was hidden for a long time, and veterans couldn't get treatment. And now, of course, there's a lot of depleted uranium floating around and laying around over in Iraq, and people are going to get sick from that. It might not be immediate, but maybe in 5 or 10 years, and it'll be hard to measure, and the symptoms will be different for each one, and there'll be cancers caused by this, and our government will stay in denial, and yet we have these hundreds of thousands of people who will be suffering.
Which also brings up the question of our responsibility to the people of Iraq. It's our government that's covered their country. Our guys eventually, hopefully, will leave that place, but their country is going to be covered in depleted uranium dust for how long to come? The indefinite future.
It's morally reprehensible, but it poses a difficult solution. You know, do you further tax the American people that had nothing to do with the decision making to pay for this and help these people that we've literally harmed? It would be nice if justice could be levied against those who promoted the war. You know, if you were a warmonger and you promoted this policy that has led us to such a disaster, it'd be nice if we could require that they personally assume some responsibility. But that, of course, is an impractical proposal.
Sounds nice, though. Sure does. All right. Well, you've said before, we just marched in, we can just march out. And you know the war party's talking point number one is that, no, Dr. Paul, we cannot do that because things will get worse. Do you think that that's right, that things will get worse? And you're saying that, well, we're not going to be able to make it better anyway, so if things get worse now, they'll still get worse if we leave 10 years from now? Or are you saying that there's a chance things will get better if we leave?
Well, I don't think anybody knows exactly what will happen. Let's say we take the next 6 or 8 months and we just leave, because you can't walk out in one day, you know, just physically you can't. Say we're out of there in 8 months, we do not know exactly what would happen the year following that. One thing we do know is no more Americans would die, and that we would save a lot of money, and maybe there would be an incentive for the various factions in Iraq to come together and talk to each other. So people say, don't we have a moral responsibility to stay there, you know, like forever? Because we've messed it up. Now we have to protect these people from what we're doing. I think our presence there is the incitement for Al-Qaeda and the incitement for the civil war and everything else. So I think my bet would be that things would get better, even though I wouldn't know exactly when that would happen. But I recall in the 60s all the predictions about we can't possibly leave Vietnam because there would be the domino effect where the communists would take over and China would rule the whole Southeast. And yet the only thing that's happened in that area is that they have become more capitalistic. Not only Vietnam, you know, trade with us and we visit with them, and we invest in Vietnam, but the Chinese, it looks like they're learning capitalism pretty well. They're our banker, so I guess they know something about buying and selling and lending. So it never turned out like they predicted. And those who have these dire predictions of what will happen in Iraq are the ones that said it would be a cakewalk and it wouldn't cost us anything. So why should their predictions be listened to? Why don't they go to those experts that claim that this would not go well? The generals that advised against it, there were some people in the State Department, there were some people in the CIA, and there were some people in the administration, in the finance area, that all said it was a dangerous thing to do. We should ask them what they think will happen if we leave instead of just listening to those who proposed the war.
It seems also that the policy is to, the current policy is to arm the factions that are fighting in the civil war, the Iranian parties, and now arming the Sunni insurgency, rather than backing the nationalists who are trying to work things out.
Yeah, and I think the weapons are multiplying. They're coming from all areas, and we want to be in the arms trade. We're promising more and more weapons over there, not only to all the Arabs, but to Israel as well. And, you know, you wonder about this whole idea. Could it be that the military-industrial complex has a voice in this? And obviously, I think they do, because whether we're in there fighting or repairing the weapons that we leave or arming more and more countries, there's only one group that's really making a lot of profits, and that's the war industry.
You mentioned earlier the possibility of war with Iran in terms of further economic consequences. It does seem that the accusations against that country are getting more and more serious. Is there some kind of congressional grapevine where you kind of get the background chatter, whether they really mean it this time? We've been kind of, you know, really worried about impending strikes against Iran, you know, at a few different times over the past few years. Is this really it?
Well, we don't know. The people I've listened to that I consider experts claim that it'd be very difficult for them to believe it won't happen before Bush leaves. He may wait a little while longer toward the end, but he just does not believe. And I guess he has a conviction about this. He does not think he should leave unless he destroys these sites that he has conjured in his mind that are going where they're going to build nuclear weapons. So I don't have any inside information, you know, from the administration, but I just think from observing what they do and what they say and their beliefs that it still worries me a whole lot that something will happen. But I can't say that it's imminent. I think that something has to galvanize the American people into support of it, and maybe they're waiting for some type of a major incident that they could blame on the Iranians. Every day you read stories about why the Iranians did this, and the Iranians sent the weapons in, the Iranians that are teaching this, and they have actually some people, and they call, we, the Americans call them, well, they're foreigners coming into Iraq, like they have a dozen or so. So, yeah, I mean, I think they are interested in their neighbors. It's sort of like, what would we be doing if Russia was in Mexico? Do you think we'd have a legitimate interest in what Mexico, what was happening there? So it seems to me like some of this would be very legitimate. But anyway, I think it's going to be twisted. I think eventually it'll be turned around, and there will be an excuse. And tragically, I think the American people will see this as a reason to rally behind the president and even impose the draft, because there sure have been a lot more talk in Washington about the draft.
Wow. Well, so you mentioned before economic consequences. I wonder if I can get you to elaborate on what you think the economic consequences of war with Iran might be, and then I guess further consequences for our liberties here at home, including conscription.
Well, always when there's a war going on, it's the excuse to undermine our liberties here. And just look at what's happening since 9/11. The war on terrorism, the war in Iraq has been the excuse to really practically destroy our Fourth Amendment and our total privacy. A war with Iran is going to just keep that going and continue to undermine our freedoms here at home. But I think financially it's going to be devastating. It will cost a lot more money. I don't think anybody thinks they can invade Iran. We don't have the troops. And they'd have to draft another 1 million people to do it. And they're running out of money. They'll run out of credit pretty soon. But I think the most significant event would be if we attack Iran, they're capable, according to some of my friends in the military and in the CIA, they're capable of literally blocking the escape route for our 160, if not 260, if you add the contractors, out of Iraq. They can't fly all of them out very quickly, and they can't come out. They could be boxed in in the Persian Gulf, and then you're going to see oil not being $70. You know, we went over there to secure oil, and of course, oil's more than two times the price it was when we went in. So I think if that would happen, I think overnight you'd see oil not only 100, but probably in not too long, it could go to easily to $200 a barrel, which finally would catch the attention of the American people what's happening. I just hope and pray they come to the conclusion that a bad foreign policy has led us down this path, and that if we just wise up, we could change it all.
Well, so in terms of securing Middle Eastern oil, if we had a completely non-interventionist foreign policy and the U.S. Navy was not in the Persian Gulf, quote-unquote, securing those shipments, if our government was not giving all these billions of dollars of weapons to the Saudis and so forth, well, would the price of oil be much higher? Do we need to have our government secure these oil flows for us?
I don't think so. I think the oil would come down, prices, because, you know, even if the Iranians ended up with more control, I mean, their main goal would be to sell their oil. So, and all of a sudden, Iraqi oil and Iranian oil would come onto the market in a much more plentiful state than it is today. So I think oil prices would come down if we walked away from there. Maybe not the first week or month, but I think that's the way to get the oil prices down. Is for us to get out of there. This whole idea that we have to secure our natural resources is sort of like a mercantilistic approach to economics, that you have to have the natural resources because they'll never be bought on the market. But, you know, I don't think Japan sits around every single day and wonders where they're going to buy oil the next day. There's still a market out there. They probably go to Amsterdam and buy their oil from there. I mean, the oil gets up there. So the markets would handle this. And no matter how powerful they are, the market is even more powerful. Remember in the 1980s, oil had gone up to 40, and then under Reagan there was some freeing up of the market, and people thought oil was going to 80. Well, it went down to $10, and OPEC used to meet every couple of weeks trying to drive the price up, but they couldn't do it. So even these cartels can't do it if the market is allowed to operate. And that's what would happen if we got out of there. The market would be much more operational, and I believe the oil prices would come down.
Now, this is kind of a legal question here on the back to Iran specifically. The State Department has reclassified Iran's Revolutionary Guards as an international terrorist group. Could that possibly be used to put an attack against Iran under the original authorization to use force against bin Laden and the international terrorists after September 11th?
Well, I think they wouldn't hesitate to do that, and they would use it. I think it would be very, very deceptive and immoral, illegal, still unconstitutional, and every member of Congress should be outraged for that stretch to decide that would be the reason they could win and claim they have justification for it. But, you know, there was it was a supplemental bill a few months ago that we had in there that Bush could not do anything against Iranians without explicit permission of the Congress. And yet that was removed by the Democrats in the conference report. So even the Democrats did not want to leave that in there. So that's why we haven't seen any significant change in policy even after this last election.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I think a lot of people had their hopes up.
They were voting for change, but they didn't get it.
What's your assessment of the situation in Israel and Palestine? Can there be peace there in our lifetime?
Oh, I think there could be. The Palestinians and the Jews and other Arabs have a history of living next to each other and getting along. It seems like when outsiders come in and stir things up and send in weapons and pick sides and intimidate and take over their policies, I think our taking over the Israeli policies is detrimental to Israel and certainly to us and to the Palestinians. I think if we weren't there, Israel would have a real incentive to get along with their neighbors, and they've had overtures towards Syria. They'd like a peace treaty with Syria, and I think things would work out. But we get in the way. We say, "Oh no, you're not allowed to do that, and you're not allowed to do this with your borders." And so Israel has sold out their sovereignty to us, but they also are inhibited from doing the things in their self-interest. I think they would work with the Arab League. They talk to them even now, but I think they would have it in their, an incentive for them to deal with their Arab neighbors. I mean, there's so many more Arabs, there's an self-interest in this. But once we get over there and start passing out weapons to both sides, it just distorts everything.
So you think if America stopped intervening rather than unleashing them against the Palestinians, making it okay or basically giving them a blind eye permission to expel the Palestinians from the West Bank or what have you, think it would go completely the other way, that they would realize that, well, now that America is not there to protect them, now they have all the incentive to really try to make peace?
Yes, and there's a lot of Israelis that would talk like we do about foreign policy, and that's the liberal party. I mean, if you say that here, or if a Jewish community here talk like that, they're called un-American and anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. Yet there's a large number of Israelis would like to have peace. Matter of fact, some of their soldiers are refusing to fight. I mean, they're tired of it all, and they're being drafted, and they're sent down there to try to settle these disputes between the settlements and the Palestinians, and they just know it's a real mess. So I think that'd be a great incentive, and we would probably hear more from those who do not support the militant approach, and we'd hear more from the liberal party in Israel on what they would like to have done.
This is Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Dr. Ron Paul. He's a Republican candidate for president of the United States. Dr. Paul, it seems like the promise of a new friendship with Russia at the end of the Cold War is fading away. What's happening?
Well, it seems like some people didn't want to really have peace and friendship with Russia. I mean, our whole policy, once again, of going right up to their borders and putting anti-ballistic missiles up there and claiming that we're protecting Europe and United States from Iran, I mean, nobody believes that. I mean, we're provoking problems with Russia. I mean, they're no angels, but we aren't especially angelic either. So, but I think this whole principle of non-intervention means that we shouldn't provoke people. We don't need anti-ballistic missiles on the borders of Russia. If the Europeans think it's worthwhile, let them do it. But they're a lot less worried about it than we are. And I would think that they would not want us there because if we provoke the Russians, they're in between us. So I have no idea what they think is a good reason to be antagonistic to the Russians, other than if you're totally cynical. Some people like cold wars and sometimes hot wars because they keep the weapons industry, you know, flowing.
Yeah, well, let's hope they don't make a war with Russia, a hot one.
Uh-huh.
They still have tens of thousands of nuclear weapons, right?
Right, and they do. And we won. We essentially won the Cold War without, you know, a military confrontation. That's why I think it's so silly that some people think that we have to militarily confront people because they're a danger to us and they don't even have a weapon. You know, they use this as a reason to go into Iraq. It was just obscene what they were trying to make us believe, and they're doing the same thing with the Iranians.
Well, in the news this week, Russia and China are doing joint war games. You feel like American foreign policy is pushing them together, healing that old Sino-Soviet split?
I think so, and I wouldn't be surprised if India and some other countries, and of course Southeast Asia too. The Kazakhstan, the other stands in that region, won't be joining there as well. So once a giant gets on the ropes, our influence can dwindle quickly, and then that will affect the value of the dollar. The dollar is artificially held up because we're the economic and military power. But as we weaken, as our economy weakens, and as our military weakens because of these protracted wars, I think you'll see more of the alignment with Russia and China and other countries getting together and say, you know, we're sick and tired of America telling everybody what to do. And I think the whole process will be reversed, because I think we get some free benefits because we have that position that we are the only superpower. But after a while, people sort of get tired of that, and that would be very detrimental to us and even more injurious to our freedoms here at home.
Well, there are some – well, we already have a proxy war in Somalia, and there are some who want to intervene in Sudan. And I've seen in interviews where you've pointed out before, it's funny how those are two African countries that have oil resources there. Of course, some have written that that's the real goal there, is to try to keep those resources out of the hands of the Chinese. But I guess what you're saying is it's much more expensive to do all this intervention than to just let the Chinese produce it and sell it to us.
Yeah, that would be it. You can sit back. They would have a tremendous incentive to do so. But people have no understanding or confidence that you know, markets work, and that you don't have to resort to this idea that you have to militarily control natural resources. It doesn't mean everything will be perfect and others will try to intrude and take over, but eventually people have to sell products. I mean, Switzerland, I don't think, sits around and worries about where they're going to get their stuff to live.
Right.
And yet, although they're mountainous, they're really in the heart of Europe, but have been able to avoid all these wars going on. I think it's fantastic, and it's a great example of what another country could do. So it's sort of sad that we embark on these programs of sanctions and embargoes and wars and bombing and threats. It's just so needless.
Well, what about humanitarian crises like what's happening in Darfur with the nomads versus the farmers, and hundreds of thousands of people apparently have died so far? Is there any room for American intervention to stop a genocide or a mass-scale slaughter like that?
A lot of liberals and Democrats are very sympathetic to what I'm saying on foreign policy, but then they always assume, well, you will go into Darfur. And my answer is no, I wouldn't do that either. I don't have the authority. I don't have moral authority. I don't have legal authority. I don't have authority under the Constitution. And in a practical way, it doesn't really work. You send food and aid over there. The military takes it over. They're in the middle of a civil war, so it sometimes does exactly the opposite. Instead of ever getting to the people who are starving, it gets in the hands of one faction over another. So I just say that it's not in our best interest. It shouldn't be that we don't care. I think ultimately what they need is an understanding of how freedom works and how the marketplace works. And we certainly should never inhibit people who want to go and help and send goods and products. If it's truly aid in food, I mean, we have a willing country here, and if we were a lot wealthier than are today, literally billions of dollars would be used to help people like that. So I do not advocate taxing people or using the military force to even do these humanitarian adventures, because sometimes what they do in the name of humanitarianism doesn't end up helping people very much.
Well, I sure appreciate your time today. Everybody, Dr. Ron Paul, he is a congressman representing District 14 on the Texas Gulf Coast, and he's a Republican candidate for President of the United States. His website is ronpaul2008.com. Thank you again very much for your time today, sir.
Thanks, Scott.
It's freedom, baby. Yeah.
Want nothing more than their freedom.
Okay, now, everybody, stand back while you celebrate freedom.
Freedom is worth.
What will you do without freedom?
I guarantee the personal freedom.
Time to wake up, America. Open your eyelids. See beyond the bureaucratic hoax and disguises. They're posers and liars, always probing and spying. Quoting the Bible while they're hoarding their bribes in. UN resolutions outweighing the Constitution. Obey them or else they're nuking you. Get it yet? No more YouTube on your internet. Power's derived from loopholes within the text. Forget the rest. It's time for a change. Dr. Ron Paul's a wire of brains. To enlighten them to despite this mistake. You better get your weapons licensed today. Before the rest of your rights are erased and more of our young soldiers' lives are at stake. Say relax for your leaders, come on, we wouldn't lie to you. To be safe, we need to stick this microchip inside you. Spread your feet a little wider, any weed or psilocybin? You were speeding, sir, cavity searches are required. If you don't like the state taking food off your plate, say vote for Ron Paul in 2008. And if you don't want the IRS repossessing your place, then vote for Ron Paul in 2008. We got troops in Afghanistan, troops in Iraq. Where's our troops at if we do get attacked? Troops out in Africa, troops in Korea. Where are troops gonna be if they do come over here? This is a message to all thinking adults who don't believe civilians should be used as catapults. Don't take what they talk for a grain of salt. They buy in votes and bulk and putting money in their vault. Most kids know it's crap when they shoot the crap, but it won't be all that when they institute the draft. We've had a revolution before, have one again, but instead of loading a gun, we grabbing a pen. We still want a constitutional government. The IRS is cruel and unusual punishment. And who said the feds could watch you through your sunroof? Pulling you over and making you yell, Uncle Sam invades the third world, Iraq, next Iran. It ain't complex, man, it's the next big scam. League of Nation building got a map and they throwing darts. Best believe Dr. Paul wants no part. If you don't like the state taking food off your plate, say vote for Ron Paul in 2008. And if you don't want the IRS repossessing your place, then vote for Ron Paul in 2008. We got troops in Afghanistan, troops in Iraq. Where's our troops at if we do get attacked? Troops out in Africa, troops in Korea. Where are troops gonna be if they do come over here? We'll have to fight them here tomorrow if we don't fight them there today. But their IEDs can't hit us from 10,000 miles away. We're out of weapon range, just ask any kid in second grade. Tell him it'll be his generation's deficit to pay. $500 million a day for this war that our nation's funding. The Federal Reserve is busy printing paper money. The billions unaccounted for should keep inflation coming. Tax return money weaker than when it was taken from we. The people think it's funny till you blow your nose with dollar bills. You would need 100 for a water bottle still. So swallow lots of pills, I hope you got the gall still. That'll be the only way to pay your monster doctor bill.
But allow me to remind you of a special document. The prescription for this sickness, time to call the doctor in. Ron Paul got the medicine to set the illness right. But no pill tonight, no bills except the Bill of Rights.
You want no child left behind, Dr. Paul delivered lives. And he won't promote a foreign policy of genocide. Forget about our borders, let's give Iran a try. These puppets bust but never say nothing like Panama. I thought this was America, landed a free market. Unless you get caught without your national ID card. Yeah, we need our homeland security and FEMA. Just look how they protected us from Hurricane Katrina. You gotta know, the doctor knows. We'll never send you to Guantanamo for questioning the Electoral College vote. He believed the document the founding fathers wrote should be honored from politician to common folk.
You'll get us out of Iraq and out of debt too.
and get rid of the money hungry alphabet soup. Ask Milton Friedman, only a free man allowed to sow his seeds can ever hope to reap them. It's happening now, roll up your sleeves and fight, cause the revolution isn't on C-SPAN. Youth of America, open your wingspan. Your forefathers fought for freedom for a reason, not to have it taken by the country they fought for, not to fight a long lost war on the wrong shores. The state should never be conducted by the businesses. That's why the lovers of liberty want it limited, cause it'll lead to a police state naturally. You wouldn't know it chilling at the Cheesecake Factory. But where's Big Brother at when cheese ain't happening? The same cats that let your cash debase rapidly. Same folks that brought you to war and secret prisons. These are guys that you are educating your children. Liberty or death, accept no substitutions. We're moving, come and join the Ron Paul Revolution. If you don't like the state taking food off your plate, say vote for Ron Paul in 2008. And if you don't want the IRS repossessing your place, then vote for Ron Paul in 2008. We got troops in Afghanistan, troops in Iraq. Where's our troops at if we do get attacked? Troops in Africa, troops in Korea. Where are troops gonna be if they do come over here?
If you were president, what would be your strategy for ending the war in Iraq?
Congressman Paul, what would it be?
Just come home. We just marched in. We could just come home.
All right, everybody. This is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Ron Paul, for joining us on the show today. Kind of appreciate y'all putting up with me stumbling through that. I think I got some good answers out of them, huh? Yeah, this is Anti-War Radio, and since this part isn't being posted up in the archives on antiwar.com, I can go ahead and beseech you to support Ron Paul's candidacy for president, because what the hell, candidacies for president aren't free, man. They cost a lot of money. So why don't you take money that you have and give some to Ron Paul so that he can tell more people about liberty? Makes sense, right? Actually, I'm really glad that the nonprofit rules and whatever keep me from talking too much about the campaign, because then it would have just come off way too much, you know, too obvious what a sycophant I am. I really do think that Ron Paul is the best congressman in American history, like Thomas Jefferson, only principled. I think I plagiarized that. I think somebody wrote that on the Lou Rockwell blog last week or something. But I agree with that. I don't know of any other politician in American history as principled as Dr. Paul, with a voting record like Dr. Paul. And, you know, he's not one of these other 20 people running for president. He's not. He's completely different. He's nothing like them at all. It's unfortunate that, you know, with the way things are, it should be like he has to wear a different color suit or something, right? So everybody can tell how much different he is than the rest of these politicians. He said a great interview the other day. They asked him, well, so look, are you really running to win, or are you just trying to spread ideas? And he said, well, I'm running to win, but yeah, the spreading of ideas matters a lot more to me than I think it matters to any of these other guys. They all just want the job. And that's the fact. I mean, come on. Think Mitt Romney is running for president so he can teach people about liberty? And here's where I'm at. Who in America is going to vote for anyone but the guy who's running so he can teach people about liberty? Well, yeah, you know, I kind of like Ron Paul on this or that issue, but, you know, I really like Obama because, you know, his threats against Pakistan or, you know, Iran, whichever. I don't know. I don't know how anyone can prefer any of these guys to Ron Paul in any way, on any issue. You know? He's probably the only candidate up there who's even really read the Constitution in its entirety. And of course, he's studied it and written books about it. He could probably cite the vast majority of it to you off the top of his head and explain exactly what it means and get it right. Versus Rudy Giuliani and John McCain? I don't know. I just can't figure out unless it's just name recognition. I don't know why Ron Paul is not polling at 79% or something, you know? And there's probably 30% in the polls who will outright tell you, yes, I hate liberty. Okay, well, fine, forget them. But what about the other 70-something percent of us? Are we really ready to abandon the Constitution, abandon the Bill of Rights? Take this massive imperial presidency that Bill Clinton created and George Bush has improved on and hand it over to Hillary? Rather than hand it over to the guy who wants to repeal it all? So, I don't know. Every day I feel guilty for not doing enough. Every day I feel like I ought to quit what I'm doing and I ought to be outside somewhere on the side of a road with the Ron Paul sign. I talk about his candidacy every day on this radio show and it's not enough. It's nothing. And so I don't know what you guys are doing, but for God's sake, go to your local meetup group. Donate $25. Do something. Put a Ron Paul sticker on your car. Read Ron Paul. How about that? Read Ron Paul and then tell other people what you learned. I mean, the guy's a scholar. You heard the list of books at the top of the interview there. Gold, Peace, and Prosperity, The Case for Gold, Mises and Austrian Economics, Freedom Under Siege, A Republic, If You Can Keep It. That's a quote, of course, from Benjamin Franklin. And A Foreign Policy of Freedom, which is a collection of his foreign policy speeches dating back 30 years. 100% right on every single issue from the mid-70s all the way through today. 100% right, never wrong on foreign policy. Ron Paul. Read Ron Paul. Hell, don't give him your money. Take your money and buy some Ron Paul books and educate yourself. And then become that much more effective at spreading the word yourself. I don't know. I don't mean to boss y'all around. I don't mean it like that. These are suggestions. You know, I'm asking you, please. Do what you can, would you? I have to tell you, this is the most optimistic I've been. I have dreams about, like, you know, complete nonsense, but something about Ron Paul winning an argument with somebody or doing well on a poll or in an interview on TV or something. It's the most hopeful I've been about liberty in a long, long time. And I think, bar none, and I really think, I'm trying to think back. I really think this is the best thing for the individualism movement, for the freedom movement since the emancipation of the southern slaves. Or since the Declaration of Independence. This is a big deal. And, you know, I don't know how big the numbers are going to be by the end of it all. But the most optimistic part of me says that the Ron Paul movement, that the tens and hundreds of thousands of people, the millions of people who go to these meetings, get each other's phone numbers, make business arrangements among each other, become friends, barbecue together, pass reading material around together is the foundation of something really important here. And of course, antiwar.com and lewrockwell.com and the Future Freedom Foundation, the Independent Institute, and, you know, other great libertarian organizations like that, the Foundation for Economic Education and the Molinari Institute and on and on and on have set such a great groundwork of reading material, educational material for this new movement. Goodbye, conservatism. Liberty wins. Conservatism finally dies. Now it's just people who believe in liberty versus the socialists. That shouldn't be too hard. This is Anti-War Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas.
Son, your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the sky, we in this together. Son, your beef is mine. As time goes by, an eye for an eye, we in this together. Son, your beef is mine. So long as the sun shines to light up the sky, we in this together. Son, your beef is mine. Let me start from the beginning at the top of the list. Know I mean, half situation like this. Another war story from a thirsty young hustler. Won't trust her, I'd rather bust her and leave you caught for the cops to discover. Well, I'll be vipping in
trying to knock me and lock me, but I be on the low sipping Asti Spumante. Niggas try to creep on the side of my teeth. Stuck the heat through the window, rock their ass to sleep over a three-pack. It was a small thing, really, yeah, but keep letting them small things slide and be a failure. If I'm out of town, one of my crew will take care of you. The world is ours, and your team's inferior. You wanna bust caps, I get all up in your area. Kidnapping children make the situation scarier. Life is a gamble, we scramble for money. I might crack a smile, but ain't a damn thing funny. I'm caught up in the dirt where your hands get muddy. Plus the outcome turns out to be lovely. Got cheese in my pocket, hit off my main squeeze. Push back the sunroof, let the cold air breeze through the butter, soft leather upholstery. But mostly, keep the gag closely, cause niggas wanna toast.
Hey yo, I gotta get mines, no matter what the consequences. Counting my blessings, add up my weapons. Cop out the gat and let my nines serve purpose. Sling, do my thing, organize thing service. Trying to make a meal is stress, you know the deal. So we sling thrills, get your cap hill, cause everything is real. Cause I wanna chill, laid up in a jacuzzi. Sip a bubbly with my fingers on the Uzi. Try to infiltrate my four, get caught dead up in New York. My brain is back with criminal thoughts. Get your life lost, never found again, my friend. Mission completed, watch you drop in less than 10. On my road to the riches, hitting snitches off of mad stitches. Your last rest, the place to be your ditch, kid. No one can stop me, try your style sloppy. You wanna be me, you're just an imitation copy. My theme is all about making the green, living up in luxury. Pushing fat whips to live comfortably.
Time goes by, and I for an eye. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. So long as the sunshine can light up the sky. We in this together, son, your beef is
a
mine.
A drug dealer's dream, stash cream, keys on a triple beam, 500 SL green, 95 nickel gleam, condominium, thug dressed like a gentleman, tailor-made ostrich, Chanel for my women friend, murdering, numbers on your head while I'm burglaring, shank is serving them, what's up to all my niggas swerving in New York metropolis. The bridge brings apocalypse, shoot at the clouds, feels like the whole Holy Beast is watching us. Madman, my sanity is going like an hourglass. Gun inside my bad hand, I slice trying to bag grams. I got hoes that used to milk you, niggas who could have killed you. It's down with my ill crew of psychos. Nas Escobar moving on your weak production, pumping corruption in the third world. We just bust.
Hold up bustin', and analyze the wildcats, sling cracks, they swinging axe. The new routines, be my eyes blacks. Playing corners, glancing all up in your cornea. Cornea, seen cats snatch money's upon you, but late. Night, candlelight, fiend with a crack, right? It's only right, feeling higher than an airplane, right? Word, yo, I wanna get this money, then blow. Take my time, blast a nine if you're front, you go. Sip beers, the German ones, hand my guns, the sons. Shallon and Queensbridge, we robbing niggas for fun. But still, write my will, I tell my seeds and bill. Mahalia, sing a tale, but the real, we still kill.
As time goes by, and eye for an eye. We in this together, so your beef is mine. So long as the sun shine, the light up. The skies, we in this together, son. Your beef is mine. As time goes by, an eye for an eye. We in this together, son. Your beef is mine. So long as the sunshine can light up the skies, we in this together, son. Your beef is mine. It's mine.
Lay back, word out, just bless him with the bulletproof. More beat, nice chef creation for your nation. Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Anti-War Radio on 92.7, 95.9 KAOS Radio in Austin, Texas. And I'm Scott Horton, and man, I'm up to my eyeballs in anti-Iran propaganda. And I have to do some debunking. Hope that's okay with you guys. Hey, listen, the number here is 646-6446. I could just as easy spend the rest of the day talking about Ron Paul, if that's what you guys want to do. Anybody has any questions? I don't speak for the man. I've met him a couple of times. We're not even really acquaintances or anything, but I have watched him very closely since around 1997, and I'm pretty familiar with his platform, and I'm also very familiar with the individualist libertarian philosophy, and so you people got your problems. Yeah, I like Ron Paul, but I like Ron Paul. He says some cool stuff, but this one thing is really a hang up for me. Well, I'll try to spin it away. That'd be great. Rush Limbaugh, man. That's me. As soon as Ron Paul's the president, I'll be the new Rush Limbaugh. And my job will be to be a complete sycophant and to do no matter what it takes, spin for the White House every day. Wouldn't that be a fun change? You hear Scott Horton? God dang, that guy's the most pro-government radio show host in the world. No, I'd spend my days trumpeting whatever it was the Ron Paul administration was up to. Unless I disagreed. But I don't think that would happen very much, so not a big deal. The number is 646-6446-646-6446. 512 if you're calling from out of town. 512-646-6446. We can talk all about Dr. Paul. And at some point I'm going to get into debunking this Iran stuff because I'm just sick and tired of it. And I'm pretty sure they're about to have a war. And I would hate for it to be the case because I feel guilty now that I didn't do enough to stop the last war. Not that I could have, but I didn't do enough. So I'm trying to do as much as I can, which is also not very much, to stop the next one. All right, first caller's already coming in. So, hey, I'm Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. My name's Greg.
Your name's who?
What was that song that you played right after the interview? I'm going to look that up and download it.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what. I found it on the Lou Rockwell blog. And give me a second here. It was posted by Tex. It's the title of the blog entry is Ron Paul, yo. And it's on YouTube, and it's from August 10th. If you look at the LouRockwell.com blog, August 10th, it's one of the YouTubes there.
Cool, thanks.
That's where I got it. Sure thing, man. All right, well, that was easy. Anybody else wants to call on the show? 646-6446. 646-6446. And, you know, that's a good song. I like the whole thing if you don't want the IRS to come take your place and all that. But the whole thing about, you know, where are troops if they do come over here? Hey, we don't need troops for guys hijacking planes or, you know, carjacking tanker trucks or shooting up malls or anything like that. We don't need troops for that. But anyway, other than that, good song. I like that. I hope it's actually black guys singing that. If that's just white frat boy types singing that and trying to sound like black guys and stuff, then that's pretty weak. But I think at least the one guy, I'm pretty sure, sounds like a black guy. Anyway, whatever. It's that's where you can find the LouRockwell.com blog from August 10th. Yeah. Anti-war radio. I'm Scott. And let's see. Yeah, well, I guess I'll go ahead and get into the debunking Iran. Oh, nope, I won't, because here comes another caller. 646-6446-646-6446. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Scott. Steve, real quick, just going to throw it out. It's kind of a sideball question coming at you from you know, get at a strange angle here.
Sure.
You're a hard money man, basically, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Hypothetically, I mean, they're doing all kinds of things in the labs. What would happen if they could, say, manufacture in a laboratory an infinite amount of gold or some, you know, vast amount of gold at a cost of, say, $40, $50 per ounce where they don't have to mine it by converting iron or some other substance? I'm not a chemist, but wouldn't that totally devalue all money? I'm going to hang up and listen to your eloquent response. Thank you.
Yeah, well, let's see. If they could do it for $40 or $50, then I guess an ounce of gold would cost $40 or $50. You're absolutely right. And that's the value of gold. See, gold might as well, my best understanding, and I'm no, you know, Mises economist or anything. I like the principle and I'll do my best. But gold is basically fiat money too. You know, gold is basically, it's just a rock. It's useful because it's pretty and people always want it and have wanted it consistently. But in terms of its intrinsic value, it's not all that useful for a great many things. But it's an element. It has that long-term desirability. And it's divisible. You know, you can melt it down and weigh out different portions and all that kind of thing. And so it's useful for that. And in order to inflate gold as it exists now, you have to invest some serious wealth into digging new gold out of the ground. And then that's great for the gold miner. And over the long term, very slowly, in most cases, it does in fact inflate the gold supply on Earth, and the value of gold goes down in terms of its real value Never mind what the ridiculous paper dollars numbers are. You know, the real value of gold will go down as new gold gets on the market. But if the mad scientist can turn lead into gold, then all bets are off. We're going to have to use silver now, because now everybody's got all the gold in the whole world, and it's not going to be a useful commodity anymore. You're exactly right. So we'll just all switch to silver. Silver is useful for all the exact same reasons that gold is useful. And further on that, you don't need a gold standard. You don't need the national government to say you have to have 100% gold reserves in your banks. Because I'm here to tell you, the national government's never going to say that. The national government wants inflation and is controlled by people who want inflation. The solution is to have a free market. Because in a free market, people are going to learn the lesson real quick. That shiny piece of gold coin over there, that I can count on. That funny money from the guy in the with the question marks all over his leisure suit at his bank down the street, I'm not doing business with him. And in a free market, gold will kick every other currency's ass in no time. Well, gold and silver and different variations and so forth. But I believe that's really the best way to have a gold standard, is to have an absolutely free market in interest rates, absolutely free market in currencies, and for all governments to stay out of it. You know, the Constitution forbids the states from creating any money other than coining gold and silver. Imagine that. The national government saying that the states, oh, you can have a state currency in Georgia, but it has to be made of gold or silver or else no. And in fact, during the Constitutional Convention, there were enough men ready to walk out of the convention in Philadelphia if Hamilton got his way and the new federal government was granted the power to emit bills of credit. And the whole Constitution would have been dead. And so they took that out. But then, of course, in the first Washington administration, they threw the Constitution in the garbage and created a central bank that emitted bills of credit anyway. And it's been a fight between people who want money to actually represent wealth and the people who want the government to control it so that they can control it through the instrument of government ever since. And it's a hell of a thing. It used to be something people fought about in public and stuff, and something that most people don't know anything about now, except, again, all credit to Dr. Ron Paul and his efforts. The first presidential administration, as far as, you know, I know in my ignorance, as far as I know, this is the first administration since, or the first presidential campaign since 1912, where central banking has even been an issue. You know, I guess maybe it came up a couple of times in 33, but certainly nobody was blaming the government central bank for creating all the money that was spent on the First World War and all the Roaring Twenties and all that funny money. No, that wasn't the bank's fault. That was apparently the government didn't have enough power. And that's why there was a Great Depression, right? Not because they had already taken control of the currency and destroyed it. But anyway, that's how it goes. Yeah, lead into gold. All through history, there's been probably like, right, myths and fables and whatever. I think when I was a little kid, I saw cartoons where the mad scientist was trying to turn lead into gold. And yeah, the story is, if you're the mad scientist who figures it out and you can turn lead into gold, well, you'll be rich if you don't overdo it too much and you don't let them find you out. Create a brick here, brick there, you'll do fine. But if you go announce to the world, here's how you turn lead into gold, then, yeah, you just destroy a lot of people's holdings, man. Absolutely. That's funny. People don't ask me stuff like that enough, man. Let's come on, y'all. Let's talk about central banking. Yay! It's anti-war radio. It's anti-central banking radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin. You know what? You can't have all these wars without a central bank. Can you imagine if George Bush had come to the American people and said, look, I'm going to need about $2.5 trillion to wage this war in Iraq. What do you say? Come on. I mean, it's not like we're a board of directors who, you know, think with our pocketbook and immediately say, absolutely not. American voters, you know, are never as responsible as stockholders, and they can be pretty irresponsible sometimes. But, geez, I think if George Bush had told us it was going to cost us $2.5-3 trillion to wage these wars, that they wouldn't be waged. Instead, as discussed with the good congressman in the last hour, they promise a revenue-neutral war. Oh, yeah, well, we're going to go in and overthrow the government, and then their oil is going to pay for it all. And ever since then, they've been cutting taxes. Well, now, how does that work? How do you wage a war that turns out to cost, rather than nothing, in fact, $2.5 trillion, and cut taxes at the same time? I know what you're saying, you know, the supply side thing, right? They cut the taxes, the economy gets a boost, and they end up making more revenue anyway because they're taking a smaller percentage of a much bigger pie and all that kind of thing. Makes perfect sense. Except that's not what's been happening. What's been happening is George Bush has been going on his bended knee and begging the governments of, right, not the people, not the free markets, the governments of South Korea, Japan, and China to please buy government debt, to buy U.S. bonds. Please, please, please. And the people of China, their wealth extracted from them by their fascist state, they've paid for our war in Iraq. And as Ron Paul said, and it, you know, he makes it so simple and easy. Well, what they do, Scott, is they monetize the debt. They create a bunch of debt. They sell as much of it as they can. And then through a bookkeeping trick, they turn the debt that they created out of nothing into money out of nothing. And so the national debt is now approaching $9 trillion. The national government's budget, because you can't really call it a federal government anymore, can you? The national government's budget is $3 trillion a year. And, yeah, this country's going bankrupt. But, you know, this is how they do it. Through central banking. You take away the government's ability to create money out of nothing. And their cartel arrangement with these private banks where they get to create money out of nothing, too. And you let the free market handle it. Then where are the Republicans going to get their money to wage $3 trillion wars? Where are they going to get the money? They're going to send revenuers out to extract $3 trillion in cash from us, from our bank accounts, from our businesses? Outright? No way. No way. Instead, they steal the value out of the money in your pocket. Like they're tearing a corner off your dollar bill. And you don't notice. And, yeah, there's consequences. It was great. I did the Charles Goyette show in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday. And he started the introduction to my interview, which was, of course, about Iran. But he started going through and saying, well, the NASDAQ's down this much. The Dow is down this much. The cost of gold is this much. The cost of oil is this much. The stock markets in Tokyo are doing this and that. And then he said, I tried to tell you people that empires aren't free, that if you want this war, that you're going to have to pay for it. You wonder why it's $3 a gallon at the tank when you go to 7-Eleven. It's because you were part of the 75% that told Bush, go ahead and kill whoever you want over there. And, you know, it's just funny because the proponents of the war and opponents of the war say that it was about making the price of gasoline cheaper. It was about getting cheap oil. Yeah. As they pump $3 a gallon gas into their tank. And it makes me wonder, the people who supported the war saying, yeah, we need that cheap oil. Do they still think that? Is there any cognitive dissonance in there? I'm pumping $3 a gallon gasoline right now. I wonder if this could have anything to do with the war over there. I wonder if this could have anything to do with the value of my money decreasing. I wonder if this is all just a scam to make me pay hidden taxes that I don't understand. I wonder if people wonder those things. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. 646-6446, you guys don't want to talk about central banking, huh? Boring. I like central banking. I mean, I hate it, but I like talking about it. I think it's extremely important. You know why? Because I have parents, and they don't work anymore. They're retired. And they don't have all that much money. They got, you know, just about enough money to live about as long as they expect to live. And that's going to be about it. And the value of their money is being stolen right out of their goddamn bank account. This picture, $10 bill sitting in my old man's bank account, which is meant to buy soup and sandwiches for him and the missus in 5 years or so. And George Bush just ripped 2/3 of that dollar and stuck it in his pocket, went and spent it killing somebody. My mom and dad's soup money. That's why it's important. And people say, oh, what about the workers? What about the workers? Well, good question. What about the workers? Workers are hurt from inflation about as much as retirees on fixed incomes are. Because as the prices go up, and again, that's not really prices going up, that's the value of the money going down, so it takes more of less valuable money to buy the same thing as before. As that happens, it's the people who work for a living, for paychecks, for wages. They're the ones who get the raises last. They're the ones whose cost of living allowances go up the last. And just look at the numbers. Real wages in this country haven't gone up in 30 years. That's who is getting screwed, is the average guy who's busting his ass for a living out there. And his wife, too. They have a lot of taxes to pay. They're both working. What about the workers, Scott? What about the workers? Well, if we had a free market, if we had a government that was in any sense resembling the one created by the Constitution of 1789, then those workers would have plenty of money and we'd be doing all right. In fact, those workers would actually be working rather than driving around in an aluminum Humvee somewhere between Samarra and Mosul trying not to get landmined to death by an invisible enemy. He'd be here producing valuable things to trade with people. Well, you know, either that or he'd be a cop, I guess. All right, that's it. Screw you guys, man. I'm debunking Iran lies now. Enemies of U.S. are friends of Iran, reads the headline. MSNBC. Iran backs a former enemy to combat American and pro-Western troops. Ooh, a picture of that beady-eyed, dangerous, swarthy, dark man, Ahmadinejad, whose name is so complicated I cannot possibly learn ever how to pronounce it. Military analysis by Lieutenant Colonel Rick Francona. Doesn't say retired. What is this? Is this something written by a guy in the doing active duty right now? Writing this military analysis for MSNBC? Or is this just real sloppy editing? Could it be that the DOD would plant this news story at MSNBC and admit in the title, this was written by the DOD? Would anybody but me even notice if they did? U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has accused Iran not only of supplying money, weapons, and training to Shia militias in Iraq, but also accuses Tehran of supplying weapons to the Taliban in Afghanistan. This would represent a reversal of Iran's past relationship with the Taliban. Iran supported the Afghan Northern Alliance against the Taliban in the late 90s until the Taliban was ousted by the American invasion in 2001. Why would Iran now support its former enemy? Simple. Iran's former enemy is now the enemy of the United States. In other words, as they say in the Middle East, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I thought that's what they said in Washington, D.C. It's the same reason the United States supported Iraq against Iran in the 1980-88 Iran-Iraq War. Our support to the regime of Saddam Hussein was not about helping Iraq or Saddam. It was about containing Iran. When Tehran sends weapons to the Taliban, it is not about supporting the Taliban. It is about combating American troop presence in the American-backed government in Kabul. Okay, I got a couple things to debunk here already. Let me rewind a bit. Okay, in the first paragraph here, Gates accuses Iran of backing the Taliban. That's funny, because it's been documented repeatedly, and particularly by the great investigative reporter Gareth Porter, that Robert Gates is the one who denies and downplays and backpedals every time some general shoots off his mouth about Iran arming the Taliban in Afghanistan. Gates is the most responsible of them when it comes to these accusations. Oh yeah, Iran, yeah, they're backing the Taliban, we're sure of it. Mr. Gates, is what he said right? Well, you know, there seem to be some arms, but we're not exactly sure where exactly they're coming from. Might be drug dealers, you know, I don't know. But now Gates is the source that, oh yeah, it's definitely true. No quote, but, you know, says his subordinate here, writing on MSNBC.com. And then he says, well, why would they do this? Well, it's simple. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's just like America backing Saddam Hussein against Iran. Well, no, it's not. Because Iraq was not a former enemy of the United States that we turned around and started backing against Iran. Relationships with the Ba'athists in Iraq were always friendly. People say, oh, they're nothing but a bunch of educated barbarians over there killing each other. It might be partly because the CIA gave the Ba'athists, dating back to the 1960s and 70s, lists of anyone who was educated in the country to be rounded up and murdered for, you know, under accusations that they were intellectuals and perhaps leaned left. So yeah, when you take everyone who's educated in a society and murder them, that tends to, you know, have consequences. But America was friends with the Iraqi dictatorship all along. Friends with the Ba'athists all along. Hell, you can read it in the Washington Times. For those not familiar, the Reverend Sung Yung Moon conservative establishment Republican paper. Can read all about how the CIA backed Saddam Hussein since 1958. As he was making his way up the ranks, murdering people above him to become the great dictator of Mesopotamia. So, no, if Iran were backing their former avowed enemies, the Taliban, in Afghanistan, that wouldn't quite be like America backing Iraq against Iran in the 1980s. That's not even really a good try. But thanks for your crappy analogy, Mr. Department of Defense propaganda spokesman. So that's paragraph one and paragraph two shot down. All right, now, the rest of it is all just a bunch of assertion. Listen to this crap. Put yourself in Iran's position. Look at a map of the region and consider the changes. You might begin to feel isolated and surrounded. That's right. When I go to MSNBC.com, I want to use my imagination. Well, gee, I guess if I was the Ayatollah, I probably would be backing the Taliban. You're right, Mr. Department of Defense, propaganda minister guy. Which way should I walk after I smartly salute and click my heels? I keep hearing, man, the propaganda today is so sophisticated. It is? Then what does that make me? Albert Einstein or something? I don't know. It's sad. Because I'm telling you, man, if you guys are counting on me to have to set all this straight for you, then we're all screwed. Here's the deal. This is bullshit. I'm not reading any more of this. You can go find it. It's in the top headlines on antiwar.com today. Enemies of U.S. are friends of Iran. It's just lies. It's the same lies from Iraq. Now they're just putting it over on Afghanistan. And all these lies are coming out of the vice president's office. And they know that they're lies. And they're trying to justify war with Iran. And they're completely full of it. No, Iran is not backing the Taliban in Afghanistan. And nobody has offered any evidence whatsoever. There's no evidence offered in this article. Well, gee, man, put yourself in Iran's situation. What do you imagine they might be doing? Well, that's the news. And, yeah, it's a bunch of crap. The Taliban, well, look, Talib means student, like religious student. And these particular Talibs are from the craziest, most revolutionary, Salafist, Wahhabi religious schools in Pakistan. That's where they're from. They are the snake handlers. Like they got in Kentucky and whatever. They're the snake handlers of Pakistan, okay? And the Ayatollahs in Iran are the exact opposite religion and are considered to be apostates and dogs and the worst forms of traitors, deserving no mercy, etc. Hell, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was threatening war against Tehran just a month ago. Threatening Iran. I love this, too. Hey, Iran, if you don't stop backing the American-backed government in Iraq, we're going to go to war against you. Nobody noticed that, I guess. That was the context. And so now the same lies about Afghanistan. And, of course, you know, the problem is I'm too far ahead of the curve. I had Gareth Porter on yesterday. I need Gareth Porter on today. So I say, Gareth, would you tell these people what bullshit this is? And he would say, why, sure, Scott. And he's written, of course, all about it. It's at antiwar.com/Porter and in the American Prospect. And look, do a simple Google search yourself. Google News for the last, you know, couple of weeks. And see about reports of arms traffic in Afghanistan. Comes from all over. The country's more awash in weapons than the great state of Texas. Left over from, what, 40 years of permanent war? 30. There's weapons everywhere, and there are arms dealers everywhere. And they have a quote from the local mullet-headed idiot going, yeah, well, see, what I do is I go up north and buy guns from the Northern Alliance, AKs, for $300, and then I come back to the south and I sell them to the Pashtuns for $400. And it pays for my cab fare, and plus I get to buy some food for my family. That's my new job. Boy, you talk about a study in Austrian economics. That's it. There's a demand for guns. I can use these prices as an indicator to see just how much demand there is. I believe I will become an entrepreneur and get involved in the distribution of guns business, says the local Afghan guy who takes a cab up to northern Afghanistan and then back again, selling AKs at a $100 markup. We talked all about this on the show the other day. The biggest poppy crop in history coming on the tail of the biggest poppy crop in history on the tail of the biggest poppy crop in history on the tail of the biggest poppy crop in history on the tail of the biggest poppy crop in history coming out of Afghanistan. Bazillions of dollars in drugs, guns, terrorism, black markets. Oh, no, it's all the Ayatollah's fault. Oh, no, Iran's behind it all. I love this. You can't keep a guy who simply wants to come here and get a job painting houses or something from sneaking across a chain link fence and coming in, you know, getting as far as Maine or something to get a job, right? But the Iranian government is responsible for the behavior of every individual who ever crosses their border, ever. Past, present, and future. Bunch of propaganda. And it's coming thick. And, you know, not too thick. Don't worry. I got it. Iran is backing the same people America is in Iraq. The government. The Maliki government. He's from the Dawa party, which was in exile in Iran for 30 years. Well, sorry, 20 years up until the invasion. Along with the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, basically owned by the Hakim family, which also was in exile, took the side of Iran in the Iran-Iraq War. And these are the guys in power now. It was Iranian spy Ahmed Chalabi that helped lie us into this war. And what they want, if you just read the freaking paper, you'll see they're the ones who want to spin off and basically have extreme federalism and extremely weak central government and create a new Shiistan in southern Iraq in alliance with Iran. And those are the guys America's backing and telling the rest of the country to submit to their authority. Good strategy. And then we're fighting the nationalists, the Mahdi army, who are fighting back. And then we blame Iran for the nationalists fighting back. When Iran's backing the same guys as us, like I just told you. And then they blame Iran for the new and improved landmines, the EFPs, that these Shiite militias are using. Despite the fact that there are dozens of news reports of American soldiers finding EFP factories in Iraq. Despite the fact that Jane's Defense Weekly says, what are you talking about? There's no evidence these have come from Iran. This is all homemade stuff. This is all 40-year-old technology. And yet, still, what do we have? Michael Gordon at the New York Times, what do we have? Show me some evidence. And what? How much evidence actually is there that Iran's supplying these bombs? None. And yet, the House and the Senate have both condemned Iran for it. The Senate passed it 97-0, saying that Iran is already at war with us, declared their intention to make nuclear weapons and use them. There's another lie. They've declared repeatedly that they have nothing but peaceful intentions for their nuclear program, which is monitored by the IAEA at all times. And they've never threatened to use those non-existent nukes on anyone. First of all, because they don't have them. And second of all, as I read some article the other day, the historians went back and checked. Iran hasn't attacked anyone in 1,000 years. That country. It's been 1,000 years since they waged an aggressive war. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I'm sure there's some here and there and there. But in any case, the so-called threat to wipe Israel off the map never happened. Any Farsi speaker in the world will tell you what he said was, he actually was quoting the dead Ayatollah Khomeini. And he said, yeah, the dead Ayatollah Khomeini once said that Israel, or pardon me, not even that, the regime in Jerusalem, the government of Israel, must one day vanish from the page of time, which is a little vague for a threat. And, of course, you notice that the word wipe, the word Israel, and the word map aren't in there anywhere. And, of course, you could be educated by Juan Cole to the fact that there's no such idiom as to wipe something off a map in Farsi. So that's just a lie. That's the one they'll always cite. That's the one that George Bush cites. But it's not true. Lord knows whether he knows if it's true or not, what he's been told by Stephen Hadley and the guys. Dick Cheney. But yeah, that's not the case. So no, they're not backing the Taliban in Afghanistan. No, they're not backing Sadr's guys in Iraq. No, they're not responsible for the IEDs. No, they don't have a nuclear weapons program. No, they have not declared to use non-existent nuclear weapons against Israel. And no, bombing them will not bring about a faster second coming of Jesus Christ to kill all the Jews and rapture up all the true believers to heaven. It's not going to happen. Charles Goyette said it on the show yesterday. So what happens when we have a nuclear war over all this nonsense and they're all left here with us? And, you know, I don't know what to say to that, except I guess we'll all go through the tribulation together and be the wiser for it. Oh, I get it. It's the year 3000 that he's coming back. Okay, we'll save our insanity till then. Maybe. Oh, and I love this one. And this goes along with the backing the Taliban in Afghanistan, which is a load of nonsense. That is, Iran controls and backs and has a friendly relationship with Al-Qaeda, which, of course, has the dictatorship, the theocracy in Iran as number three or four on their list. It's the giant Shiite Ayatollah-controlled Persia that stands in the way of that pipe dream caliphate that Osama bin Laden or any of his followers will never be able to build that they want so bad. They are vowed enemies. In fact, as discussed with Gareth Porter on the show yesterday, closest thing you have to Al-Qaeda in dealing with Iran, other than the five or six Al-Qaeda guys that they have imprisoned there, including Osama bin Laden's son, who they've offered to turn over to us, and we've declined that. Other than those arrested Al-Qaeda guys that the Iranian government holds in captivity, the closest thing you have to an Al-Qaeda relationship with Iran is America backing Jandullah in Pakistan committing acts of terrorism inside Iran. That's your link. Now, I guess if you turn Al-Libi back over to the torturers, maybe you can get him to say that he was mistaken. He didn't mean to say Iraq. It was Iran that taught him and his buddies how to hijack planes. If you just torture him again, maybe you can get Al-Libi to say that. That's all we need, right? Is, oh, you know what? That thing about Mohammed Atta in Prague, Czechoslovakia was true, but it turns out it was Iranian intelligence he was meeting with there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Niger uranium deal, 500,000 tons of yellow cake uranium, that very plausibly being bought by Iraq. No, actually, the reason that didn't pan out, it was Iran trying to buy all that uranium. Yeah, I know they have their own uranium mines, but never mind that. Yeah, it was Iran that knocked down those towers. I wonder if they're doing polls like that. I wonder if we'll see poll numbers like that. If you believe Iran was responsible for September 11th, raise your hand. I wonder how many people. What's the percentage now that we keep seeing Aminajad's face up there in place of Hussein's, in place of bin Laden's on our TV screens? I wonder how many people think that he's the one who knocked down those towers now. Well, shit, he must have done it, else why would we be ready to wage war against him? It's not like any of the other things that they say about him are true. Oh, yeah, and there's one more lie, which goes almost every time, and that is that the leaders of Iran, they're crazy. They're insane. They're religious. They're wackos. They can't be dealt with. They cannot be reasoned with. They only understand one thing, force. And that's why we have to kill them all. And that's just the deal. There's no way around it. They're crazy people. And yet, if that's true, why is there 30 years of history of Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and Eric Edelman and Elliot Abrams and the very same murderous criminals who occupy the American White House right now doing business with the Iranian Ayatollahs? Give me a break. In 2003, and you can get the PDF file. In fact, maybe I'll try to upload it somewhere and link to it, or you can just Google it, man. It's really easy to find. There's a PDF file of the exact copy of the Great Iranian Peace Offer of 2003 that they gave to a Swiss representative who came and brought it. And, of course, again, from Switzerland, the neutral country, the guys who, you know, the Geneva Conventions and all that stuff, where everybody makes their deals. They're the ones who don't take sides. And their diplomat came and brought us the peace offer. And according to all the reports, at least in the Washington Post and so forth, he was verbally insulted and yelled at and derisively dismissed. How dare you bring us a peace offer from Iran, you Swiss son of a bitch? Get out of here. Can you imagine that? God, it's like a comic book, only it's real. And, you know, all the blood is real. But no, their peace officer said, hey, nuclear program, it's on the table. You want to talk about what we can do with this? No problem. Hezbollah, we'll put pressure on them to give up any kind of resistance toward the Israelis and make a deal and be friends. Hamas in the West Bank and Gaza, we'll put pressure on them, normalize them, make them part of the government, force them to, you know, quit acts of terrorism, etc. You name it. Let's discuss it. We're willing to give it all up. Let's talk. Let's be friends. All we seek is official recognition. They said they would recognize Israel. It's right there. The Iranian peace offer of 2003. You can't miss it if you just put it in your little search engine there. Can't miss it. This is the that crazy Ayatollah who is so insane and so much like Hitler and so forth that to talk with him is to appease him. Just like when Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia. And yet the Iranians haven't invaded anything. They're the ones trying to not get invaded. And as Ron Paul pointed out, and I don't know why I ever go 10 minutes without pointing this out, you bomb Iran, you're putting all the American soldiers in Iraq at severe risk. As Ron Paul said, they can cut off our guys' escape route. How do they get out of Iraq? To Kuwait. From Baghdad to Kuwait. To the southeast. And how do they get there? Through a solid wall of Shiites with AKs. William S. Lind, who is no hippie, who is no liberal or radical in any sense. In fact, he's the director of the Center for Cultural Conservatism at the Free Congress Foundation. Wrote an article in the American Conservative magazine. He's a military strategist, a military historian. And he wrote an article called How to Lose an Army, Surge into Iraq and Then Bomb Iran. You could very well lose a great number of American forces in Iraq. As he said, there is no field army in Iraq right now at all. They are penny packeted. That's his words. Penny packeted. All around that country. And as Seymour Hersh's intelligence sources said in the New Yorker magazine, if America bombs Iran, the south of Iraq is going to go up like a candle. He said, the imams in Iran could take Basra. He said the government in Iran could take Basra, that is the southern Iraqi city, port city. The Iranians could take Basra with 10 imams and a sound truck. That is, hey everybody, America's attacking Iran, it's time for you to grab your AKs, enough of this nonsense, and expel the occupier, and it would be on. And there's no air power going to save the day in a situation like that. So, I don't know why that's not the first thing out of my mouth whenever I bring up Iran. That's, you talk about your Iranian hostage crisis. That's your Iranian hostage crisis. You bomb Iran, you're turning over the fate of the Americans in Iraq to them. And then, of course, I'm sure they'll figure out a way to blame all the peaceniks. Right? Well, if you guys had just supported a full-scale nuclear holocaust in the first place there, this would never have happened. Yes. martial law ever become a reality in America? Some fear any nuclear, biological, or chemical attack on U.S. soil might trigger just that. KSLA News 12 has discovered that the clergy would help the government with potentially their biggest problem, us. Charlton Heston's now famous speech before the National Rifle Association at a convention back in 2000 will forever be remembered as a stirring moment for all Second Amendment advocates. At the end of his remarks, Heston held up his antique rifle and told his crowd in his Moses-like voice, "Over my cold, dead hands." Of course, you all know that Heston helped get the Gun Control Act of 1968 passed by doing a bunch of propaganda spots with his commie buddies. But anyway, while Heston, then serving as the NRA president, made those remarks in response to calls for more gun control laws at the time, those words live on. Heston's declaration captured a true American value, an overarching desire to protect our freedoms. But gun confiscation is exactly what happened during the state of emergency following Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, along with forced relocation. U.S. troops also arrived, something far easier to do now, thanks to last year's elimination of the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act. Wasn't completely eliminated, I don't think. Was it? God. Which had forbid regular U.S. Army troops from policing on American soil. If martial law were enacted here at home, like depicted in the movie The Siege, easing public fears and quelling dissent would be critical. And that's exactly what the clergy response team helped accomplish in the wake of Katrina. Dr. Darrell Tuberville serves as chaplain for the Shreveport Fire Department and the Caddo Sheriff's Office. Tuberville said of the clergy team's mission, "The primary thing that we say to anybody is, let's cooperate and get this thing over with, and then we'll settle our differences once the crisis is over." Sweet. Such clergy response teams would walk a tight rope during martial law between the demands of the government on the one side versus the wishes of the public on the other. In a lot of cases, these clergy would already be known in the neighborhoods in which they're hoping to defuse that situation, assured Sandy Davis. He serves as the director of the Caddo Bossier Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness. Well, now every couple of counties has to have their own separate Homeland Security Department, huh? Jesus Christ. For the clergy team, one of the biggest tools that they will have in helping calm the public down or to obey the law is the Bible itself. Specifically, Romans 13. Dr. Tuberville elaborated, because the government is... Oh, God. Oh, man. We are so beyond doomed in this country. I don't know, dude. I can't help but recommend to people, you know, consider packing up your shit and getting the hell out of here. Pardon me, I'm off on a tangent here. For the clergy team, one of the biggest tools that they will have in helping calm the public down, again, during a state of martial law, is the Bible itself, specifically Romans 13. Dr. Tuberville elaborated, because the government is established by the Lord, you know. And that's what we believe in the Christian faith. That's what's stated in the scripture. Civil rights advocates believe the amount of public cooperation during such a time of unrest may ultimately depend on how long they expect a suspension of rights might last. It's purely temporary until the long war is over, when your great-great-grandchild's an old man and all the Muslims have been murdered. Dig this, Romans 13, that's funny, I just read a great article by a Christian scholar on LouRockwell.com last week saying, oh, please, don't give me that Romans 13's crap. As though the Bible says you're supposed to worship other men and do what they say because they say so. And now the United States government was ordained by God? Bull. The word God isn't in the U.S. Constitution anywhere. It's ordained by the also mythical premise of popular sovereignty. It was individuals who were born free, who owned themselves, who created states to protect their rights and allow those states to create a federal government. The U.S. Constitution was created by God. That's funny. They were all a bunch of atheists. They're all, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. Yeah, they're the ones who thought that God may exist, but if he did, he probably set the universe in motion eons ago and hasn't paid attention since. Oh no, but it says right here in the Bible that if a Roman conquistador is pointing a sword at your throat, you ought to do what he says. So, I guess I'll just go along with that. I'll tell you what, they declare martial law, clergy, don't come proselytizing to me and tell me it's okay, pal. Don't you come knocking on the door telling me that God wants me to submit to soldiers in my streets. Fuck you, dude. Clergy response teams. You can take whatever you thought America ever possibly could have once been worth a shit in any sense and forget it. Forget it. This is what we get for pursuing greatness. We gotta have national greatness around here. And what we get instead is everything destroyed. Our entire legacy of liberty abandoned. And your local ministers signing up with the state. In the event that soldiers are brought out on the streets to kill Americans, I want to be ready to serve and to help convince people to stay inside and be good little slaves. As the last vestiges of their liberty are shattered. Now, before you go getting upset and grabbing your rifle, Tom, now listen. It says right here in the Bible that if they declare martial law, you're supposed to do whatever they tell you. I sure am glad that the revolutionary generation of 1776 didn't believe that. They shot their government until it was dead. Until their troops got on their boats and left. Well, gee, if the guy's wearing a red coat, and he tells me I shouldn't go on my midnight ride to warn the people of Lexington and Concord that the red coats are coming to seize their guns, well, I better do what the man in the red coat says, because his office was ordained by God. It says so right here. Wow, wouldn't that be a great history if Paul Revere had been some schmuck like Dr. Tuberville? And, I'm sorry, I don't remember who read it, but there was a great piece on LouRockwell.com just the other day. If you do the Google search, all you got to do is put site, colon, LouRockwell.com, Romans 13. There's a guy just did a thing last week completely obliterating this foolish argument. So any of you out there who think that, hey, if it's in the Bible, I believe it and don't talk bad about it, fine, that's fine. But at least read a conflicting opinion about what that passage actually means. And now tell me that your local minister who's got a contract from the Office for Department of Homeland Security has a monopoly on interpreting it for you. Please. For God's sake. Vote Hillary. No, sorry. All right, that's it. Here's some Mastodon.